This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Here's Rich Bradbury. I'm in the studio with...
Frida Liu.
And...
Audrey Raj.
All over again. How are you two today?
Deja vu. Huh? Very good.
Very good. There was a bit of a pause there.
Audrey. It's a bit gloomy, but we're all smiling in the studio.
We're all smiling. Frida's smiling a bit more than normal. What did you get up to last night?
Well, I went to the unreserved launch of their publication, and who should turn up?
I don't know. Who should turn up? You tell us.
Hamdal / Luther / Idris Elba.
Oh my word. Audrey, yeah. How do you feel about that?
Go on. I have no words.
You have no
Hashtag
words.
Hashtag jangan jealous.
I'm a big green monster today. Thanks, Frida.
Folks, if you want to get in touch with the show, not to talk about Idris, but of course to discuss what we've got coming up on the show, the WhatsApp number, of course, 018-789-8899, and we're on Twitter at BFM Radio. We've got more about Grab and Uber coming up a little bit later on in the show, but we'll be starting off with a story which is really interesting about entrepreneurship and whether or not it has... an ageism problem. And it's a really interesting story because when I first read it and I first read the headline, I jumped to a conclusion. I think a lot of people at home may well do the same. So that's what we're going to be starting off with. We're then moving on to a story about how Netflix have been banned from competing at the Cannes Film Festival. Possibly some sour grapes there from the French, but we'll see. Then it is the Grab and Uber story. We're moving on to how the takeover deal has triggered the watchdog scrutiny down in Singapore and what could come of that. Story number four about how staying late at work and how you can stop it. Then we'll be wrapping up by a big deal over in the US, how Foxconn have bought Belkin, Linksys, and Waymo. That's a big story coming out of the US. So let's start off with this story. Does entrepreneurship have an ageism problem?
Yeah, so let me just ask the both of you, since you're here with me. Picture a successful tech entrepreneur. In your mind's eye, how old are they?
He's got a hoodie on.
Yeah, he's got a hoodie, probably a t-shirt. Right. I don't know, late 20s, early 30s.
Kind of thing. So I guess if you, like some of the listeners out there, might be imagining someone who's young, digitally native, someone who's ready to shake things up.
We'll call him Mark.
Yeah,
we'll
just for fun.
Well, I think that's the same image I had in my mind as well. But here's the thing. Paul Graham, the founder of Y Combinator, he has noted that following research and several surveys, the cutoff in investors' heads when it comes to, well, a tech entrepreneur is 32. And after 32, investors start to be a little skeptical in funding tech entrepreneurs who are, well, older than 32. Wow. So is there an element of ageism when it comes to entrepreneurship? So there's more research, right? So surprisingly, a preliminary study shared last year suggests that Silicon Valley entrepreneurs who have a successful exit have an average founding age of, get this, 47.
Oh, wow.
Those are tech entrepreneurs. And the average entrepreneur is a ripe old 39 years old when starting a company, according to the Kauffman Foundation, who've also done extensive research on
Can
this.
Can we not use the phrase ripe old at 39?
See? Sorry.
Right?
I'm just reading
I'm feeling ageism already.
Yeah. I'm just reading off the article. So overall, research shows that mid-career entrepreneurs are 5 times more likely to still be in business 5 years later than those starting a business out of college. So
I blame the media. We've glorified young entrepreneurs, right? I mean, you see them coming out and, you know, the fact that the person's young and there are a lot of successful businesses and they don't, if they're a bit older, they don't bring up the fact of the person's age, right? So I think it all started with Bill Gates in the 80s, you know, when
Bill Gates, Steve Jobs,
that kind
all
of
that
thing,
crowd,
you
yeah.
know, so that whole persona of young, successful, that kind of thing.
And you remember, I think Arvind did a show, a Five for Fortune show sometime last month about the romanticized startup stories. And all of them had stories about these young college graduates or dropouts who'd be sitting in a garage somewhere and come up with this beautiful idea to start, I don't know, Facebook, Tinder, YouTube.
Right.
That's the story that
Google
most of
even.
Us, yeah, most of us have in our minds, right? But you know, most successful entrepreneurs actually start later in life. People start businesses later for a variety of reasons, but experience is a common factor. The best ideas reveal themselves with time, learning and exposure to a variety of challenges, I guess. And also there's a quote here that was quite interesting. when you are working in the real world, you might see an opportunity to make a product better or do something more efficiently. Don't you
right.
agree with
yeah,
that?
Yeah, I do agree with that, yeah.
And it also doesn't hurt that people 40 and older tend to have more money saved or assets to borrow against their business up and running.
I think that's the case with our boss.
Ah,
right.
Yeah, you're right.
You know, Malik Ali, you know, he started this business also, I think it would be in his early 40s.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So some of the examples that I just, you know, Googled up very quickly. Donald Fisher co-founded Gap at the age of 41. Charles Ranlett Flint launched IBM at the age of 61. Mm. Bernie Marcus co-founded Home Depot at 50. Robert Noyce co-founded Intel at 41.
So I've still got 20 years to go then.
No, but there are like many more entrepreneurs.
Before hitting 40, I should say.
But there are many more entrepreneurs who started in their 30s. The founder of Lenovo at 39. The founder of Zara at 39, HTC at 39. Oh, are you noticing a trend here, Rich?
Yes,
how
yes.
old are you again?
Ooh, that was mean.
Hey, she got to see Idris last night. Also, the founder of Garmin at 38, Hugo Boss at 37, Macy's at 36, LinkedIn at 36, okay. Carlsberg at 35, Procter & Gamble at 35, Boeing at 35.
Wow.
See, they don't bring out the fact that they're, you know, of a certain age. These are very successful businesses, right? Yeah. So they don't bring it up. So that's where, like I said, media has just, like, you know, glorified youth.
Yeah.
You
yeah.
know, and
it's not an accurate reflection of the ecosystem.
Yeah, but it's sad because if you talk about how the cutoff in investors' head is 32, you know, are they missing out on great opportunities?
Is that the same here though in Malaysia though? I mean, that could be said definitely for Silicon Valley. I wonder.
I think there is no research, but there is this feeling as well that when you're young, you start this business, this whole thing with the startup scene, and then the startup scene. If I go into a room where they have these the pitches and all that. I see a lot more younger people,
right? Yeah. And even the younger people who are involved in that, I think they have that idea in their head that it has to be, it's a young crowd, right?
But here's the thing, Frida, I know you've been interviewing business owners on Open for Business for almost 10 years now. Mm. And you've noticed that there is an average age of maybe about
30?
Yeah, 30 or so?
Yeah.
But how many of those startups are still around after 5 years and become successful businesses?
True.
That's the other question.
Right.
All right, then. So let's ask people at home, how old is too old, I guess? You know, is 40 too old to be an entrepreneur, to start your own business, do you think? Let us know. Tell us what you think. 018-789-8899, of course, on WhatsApp or on Twitter at BFM Radio. So we've just discussed, and you know, the average age according to Silicon Valley is 47.
For tech entrepreneurs.
For tech entrepreneurs, but they have this strange cutoff thing in their mind at 32.
32 is where investors feel like, you know, maybe these people are too old for me to start pumping cash into their businesses.
Interesting. Let us know what you think. 018-789-8899. Of course, we'll be coming back to that story all the way through the show. Next story up next, about Netflix, how they've been banned from competing at the Cannes Film Festival. So according to a report for the Hollywood Reporter, this should be an Arvin story, actually. He should be here doing this. Thierry Frémaux, the head of Cannes, told the Hollywood Reporter last week that the ban is because Netflix refuses to release its films in theaters, choosing instead to debut them on its streaming service, and in some rare cases do day and date releases, so the film can be seen both online and off. In the case of the movie Okja and the Meyerowitz stories, films that were entered into last year's Cannes to widespread protests from French filmmakers, Netflix was unable to secure last-minute permits for one-week theatrical releases due to French media regulations. Here's a quote. Last year, when we selected these two films, I thought I could convince Netflix to release them in cinemas. I was presumptuous. They refused. Mm. The Netflix people love the red carpet and would like to be present with other films, but they understand that of their own model is now the opposite of ours. Mm. I don't know. This all sounds
like... Napster.
It sounds like a bit of sour grapes, right? I mean, we know that there's this real big kind of to-ing and fro-ing between the traditional movie industry and what Netflix are in fact doing. They've turned the entire business model upside down. You know, the thing with the Super Bowl not too long ago, you know, they announced in the middle of the Super Bowl that the new Cloverfield movie would be released directly after the end of the movie, the football game. And of course, it was. Movie theater companies and these big behemoths cannot do that. They can't, you know, get everything out that fast. And so is this a case of the French media just going, you know what? They're doing things too fast and we don't like it. Therefore, you can't have any of movies in our... They're not allowed for the... They're not eligible for the award.
I'm just going to play devil's advocate here. If you can watch this movie on Netflix, would you go out to the cinema and watch it?
Right.
Right.
Maybe it's a case of poor demand.
Yeah. Could well be that. Yeah. Could well be that.
I know if it's one of those movies with effects and all that, you still the same. You still need to go to the cinema. But if it's like a dialogue-ish kind of movie, do I really need to go to the cinema if I have another choice?
All right.
Let's look at some of the most recent movies, right, on Netflix. Bright, Annihilation.
Yep.
Would you have watched those in the cinema, Rich?
No, I would not. Annihilation looks really pretty on a big screen in my home. But
okay.
I think right. If you were to see it in the cinema, you could probably pick flaws in it, I think.
And you would have to pay for it again.
And you would have to pay for it again, yeah.
Which would cost you more than, I don't know, 1/4 of your Netflix subscription for the month.
Yeah. Good question. All right, folks, we are asking the question as to whether or not you think, is 40 too old to start a business? Is it too old to be an entrepreneur? We've had this, we were speaking about how there's a bit of an ageism problem over in Silicon Valley. Audrey, do you have something already?
Yeah, there's this one message from text number with the last four digits, 6003. This person says, it doesn't matter. It's just no limit for anyone to want to start a business.
Want to start a business. Okay, keep the messages coming in, of course. 018-789-8899. We'll be here all the way through until 1 o'clock. Music coming up from the Hives. It is Walk, Idiot, Walk here on BFM 89.9.
Because feelings matter. BFM 89.9.
Welcome back to Enterprise Biz Bytes. I'm Rich Bradbury. I'm in the studio with
Audrey Raj.
Frida Liu.
There's some jealousy in the studio today, ladies and gentlemen, I can tell you now. We started off the show with a story about how there's people saying that entrepreneurship has an ageism problem, particularly over in Silicon Valley. We were told that after the age of 32, people start to falter as to whether or not they feel comfortable about investing in your potential company. But research has shown that the average tech entrepreneur in Silicon Valley is of the age of 47. So we were asking you guys at home, you know, is 40 too old to start a business? You know, something along those lines. What do we have?
Yeah, so there's a message here that says, Ray Kroc started McDonald's when he was 50 plus. Colonel Sanders started KFC in his 60s. This is from Money. Yeah. And then Robert Lim chimed in and he says, I hate stats. It matters because those guys got mortgages and financial obligations. They are risk averse. Generation gap in terms of applications, for example, gaming. And then remember that text that we said earlier? It doesn't matter. There's no limit for anyone who wants to start a business. That was actually from Tenny. And he adds on here that he's a fan of Rich.
Thank you very much, Sunny. My point is, a lot of the kind of younger tech entrepreneurs that we talk about and we see, Steve Jobs, for example, and the others, they tend to come from families that have a little bit of money to help bankroll their youngsters' businesses, right?
Steve, really?
His family got money. Yeah, they got a bit of money. Okay. Yeah, right. We need to move on to story number three then, and this is continuing from the debacle that we spoke about yesterday. Grab coming in and swiping all of Uber's everything in Southeast Asia. So the takeover deal has triggered some watchdog scrutiny down in Singapore. Audrey, with the details.
Yeah. So in Singapore, regulators are preparing to step in to ensure that Grab's acquisition of Uber's business in the region does not erode competition or result in a monopoly. So the Competition Commission of Singapore, the CCS, has warned that if it saw this happening, it could ask for the merger, which both Grab and Uber confirmed yesterday. They could ask for the merger to be modified or even unwound. Or it could also consider issuing interim measures prior to the final determination of the merger. This is, of course, because competition laws in Singapore prohibit mergers that may result in a substantial lessening of competition. And apparently, the Land Transport Authority also said that it was watching the development closely to ensure that no single market player dominates the sector to the detriment of commuters and drivers.
Interesting.
Yeah. No, I'm just how this, you know, it's a company that's, I think 2012, they weren't even around, right? The likes of Grab and all that. And of course, the issue then was, do we even want e-hailing, right? And how the conversation has completely changed in a period of 5-6 years. You know, I hope just gives way to new players to come in, you know, find a niche within that and do that. But I don't know. You know, is that fair? I don't know.
I mean, I'm looking at from a Malaysian perspective, and you know, the idea of good competition in that space is great for us. But when they do come in and they do that, there is no other word for it. They have monopolized that market, have they not?
Mm. Well, what is good competition for us? I remember, I think it was just maybe about 2 weeks ago, we were looking for feedback from drivers.
Yeah.
Because they felt like they just weren't getting paid enough, and that Uber or Grab could indiscriminately, drop prices, and they would be, managing the overheads plus very minimal wages for each trip. And that they felt that they were being hard done by, right? The drivers. So what's good for us, the riders isn't necessarily good for the drivers, right?
And I did read this morning as well that Grab have said that they will not be hiking prices.
Yes.
But they also said anytime soon.
Yeah, so this is the exact quote.
Soon.
This is the exact quote from Grab after drivers and riders expressed concern about this deal, right? They said that passengers will get to enjoy shorter waiting times, more convenient and affordable rides through one platform. Drivers will also earn higher incomes with more ride bookings through one platform, as well as more efficient and faster matching with passengers.
You see, now this is an opportunity for taxis to improve their service. If they haven't already. And we had this conversation as well, right? I mean, this is
If they were like ComfortDelGro in Singapore, I'd be happy.
Right?
But they're not.
Yeah. So that's and then we can always go back to the good old days where we drove.
Right.
But the thing is with ComfortDelGro, I think they are really concerned about this deal as well, because wasn't it like just a couple of months ago that they struck a deal with Uber to kind of acquire like a 51% stake in Uber's Lion City holdings? So, analysts say that ComfortDelGro is the biggest loser from this Grab-Uber deal. The collaboration between the two also led to the launch of Uber Flash just in January. So what's going to become of Uber Flash, right? Mm. And analysts believe that the alliance would give Singapore's biggest taxi operator some help in keeping up with a disrupted taxi industry, as well as an uplift in earnings for its automotive engineering services and car leasing and rental divisions. But the merger that was announced yesterday will likely render this alliance futile. Grab had previously reached out to ComfortDelGro and they rejected Grab in order to work with Uber. And now they're back to square one because they're going to have to work with Grab anyway.
Oh dear,
But okay, that's just in Singapore. That's ComfortDelGro. They're the biggest taxi provider in Singapore. What about taxi drivers in the rest of the Southeast Asian countries, right? And in Malaysia. So the move by Grab and Uber could be both beneficial and detrimental to taxi operators. While more rational pricing of commuter fares for private hire cars could shift some demand back to taxis, a monopoly by Grab over the private hire car business would put it in a better position to compete against taxis as well.
I tell you what is going to be interesting. Was it last week or the week before we spoke about Ola, the taxi startup in India?
Yeah.
Now, they're moving over to Australia, aren't they? They're kind of expanding over there. It will be interesting to see what Uber's play is over in Australia over the next couple of months with all this movement around Southeast Asia. I'd like to keep track of that. That will be interesting. Right, we have to take a break, but a quick reminder, we started off with the show with a story about whether or not entrepreneurship has an ageism problem. Maybe you instinctively default to an image of someone in their 20s, young, digitally native, wearing a hoodie with the name of Mark. We were asking whether or not you think the age of 40 or above is too old to start your entrepreneurship journey. Let us know. Tell us how old you were, in fact, if you started a new business, something along those lines. The number is 018-789-8899, or get us on Twitter. We are at BFM Radio. Some music coming up from Big Data. It is Snowed In here on BFM 89.9, the business station.
Bigotry Free Malaysia, BFM 89.9.
Welcome back to Enterprise Biz Bytes. If you're only just joining us, we started off with a story about how entrepreneurship has an ageism problem. Maybe you instinctively default to an image of someone in their 20s, young, digitally native, in a hoodie, ready to shake things up. We've been asking you whether or not you think that 40 or above that age is too old to start a business. We've had a bunch of feedback about people who have started their businesses in their 50s, their 60s. Not quite the 70s yet, though. I'm sure there might be a few out there. Let us know what you think. Get us on WhatsApp, 018-789-8899, or get us on Twitter at BFM Radio. Now, yesterday we told you a story about how the Korean government are starting to wind down computer terminals from 8 p.m. down to 7:30 p.m. down to 7 p.m. Because they figure that the government workers are working too hard and need a break. We kind of have a related story to that.
to connect with that. So this is some tips on how you can stop staying late at work and by doing these three things. I don't have a problem.
I don't. Get off your seat, turn off the light, go home. Three things done.
So these are the really hardworking ones. So by the way, there are a couple of great ideas. One of which is to set fake deadlines. Of course, this came from Fast Company. You might hate planning because you're scared that structure hampers spontaneity and you'll get worse at dealing with unexpected assignments as a result. But the opposite is actually true. The more you plan, the more choices you'll be able to make over the course of your workday that can improve your chances of leaving where and whenever you want. So that's where fake deadlines come in. Add weekly reminders to your calendar to work on key activities. Just set them at least one day ahead of the actual due date.
Right.
For example, plan to finish a report that's due on Friday by Wednesday or Thursday. And that way, if something unexpected comes up, you can still leave work on time and finish a report by the real deadline in the next day or two.
You're tricking your brain.
This is, I think this is Parkinson's law.
Yeah.
Right? Where, you know, you're given a certain amount of time, you'll be able to finish the work because you're going to go on a holiday.
Mm-hmm.
Suddenly, you know, you're just able to do a lot more faster. You, Odds, are very good at organizing your thoughts, are you?
Well, what I do is the night before, I kind of plan my day out and actually write down what needs to be done on the day. And I also set fake deadlines, but they're usually 1 week ahead.
Okay.
You do that?
Yes. You know, before she went for delivery, she was she had stories for 6 months.
Baby must be born on this day. Fake deadline.
Hey, she came on time.
she didn't follow your rules. But, you know, this is something that I do as well, right? And just it just helps. Sometimes there's a lot of things in your head, and when you just write it down, you're like, oh, actually, it's okay. It's manageable. I'll do the big ones first, right? A second way of doing this is schedule 2 blocks of small tasks only time. So when your head's down a big project, it's tempting to leave all your small tasks like email, administrative work until the end of the day. But scheduling 2 blocks of time, once early in the day and once late in the day, can spare from having to knock those out after hours. Because that really annoys me. Mm-hmm. The little things, right?
Yeah, this is my biggest problem, actually, because sometimes I'm in the midst of doing something, I'm in the midst of, you know, editing a show or something like that, and then my emails come in, and then next thing you know, it's an hour later and I'm still replying emails.
But I have got into the habit, and I think this was something that actually Malik mentioned to me a while ago, checking emails just twice a day. When you first come into work at 9 a.m. or whenever you arrive, you know, you'll see what's coming overnight.
Right.
And then just before you leave at night was the other thing that I looked at. I cheat a little bit. I do it 3 times.
Okay.
Once in the morning, once in the mid-afternoon, and once in the evening. And I found that that's really helped me to get rid of the majority of the rubbish.
Yeah.
And that's another thing that you're recommended to do as well, even with your phones, because now you take your work home on your phones, right?
Yes.
Is to disable the push notifications and enable the pull notifications.
Right. Yeah.
Right. So that's the thing. I find this a real difficulty because I will just generally just check Gmail even when I'm on holiday. I mean, check work mail, right?
Yeah.
So and it's just like, okay, I think I don't have to work on it. Delete. So I can't send anything in my inbox.
I have that same problem. If there's one of those little red things on my
has to go. Okay. Anyway, great Elizabeth. So the author Elizabeth Gray Saunders here. She says that I try to have my last meeting end at least 30 minutes before I want to leave the office. That allows me to wrap up my notes, do a quick scan of my email, and generally get everything buttoned up before I head out, which makes it easier to unplug from work completely when I leave the office. Third idea is to script your departure. So you can't plan everything, but you can impose some regularity on the end of your workday, even when unexpected issues arise. For example, if you tend to lose track of time, set a recurring reminder on your calendar phone to prompt you to start getting ready to leave. So she said many of her clients set their reminders for around 30 minutes before their desired departure times. And she says you have to script it. What she does is she actually has these habits. If you underestimate how long it takes to get your stuff together, for instance, a daily ping from your phone can help you nudge to start putting on your coat. We don't have to put on our coat. Change your shoes, empty your coffee mug, and gathering your papers about 15 minutes before it's actually time to go home.
Mm.
So that kind of ritual, I guess, sort of just gets you like, okay, it's time to go home, and that's it.
I found that people are really good at getting home, leaving early and getting home on time, but just not so good at getting to meetings on time and one thing or another. You know, so if you can have a ping that sets you actually have to leave now. You can't just say, I'm on the way.
Yeah.
You know, that would be a lot more useful because then we can all leave home earlier, leave for home earlier.
Yeah, right? Because it's usually all these meetings that people turn up late for.
Right. Oh, it was the rain. Oh, traffic was bad. Oh, you know what? Just leave earlier. It's as simple as that, right?
Yeah, so set your clock earlier.
You're right.
Fake deadline.
Yeah, fake deadlines. Yeah. It all works. Ladies and gents, if you've only just joined us, we are talking about, well, we started off the show with whether or not entrepreneurship has an ageism problem. Reports coming out of Silicon Valley have said that the average age of a tech entrepreneur there is 47, but if you get to the age of 32, some of the investors are a little bit reticent about giving money to your company. So the question we asked is whether or not the age of 40 or above is too old to start an entrepreneurship journey. Let us know what you think.
Yeah, and so most of the messages that are coming in, I notice a trend here. Most people are just sending us some of the founders who have started their business in their 30s or in their 40s, and some of the notable ones, Masaru Ibuka founded Sony at 38, Hugo Boss founded Hugo Boss at 37, Milton Hershey founded Hershey's at 37, Doris Fisher founded Gap at 36, we spoke about that
These
earlier.
Are all under the age of 40, though, this is what we're saying.
Yeah. And Nami Hai Odairi founded Hitachi at 36. So these are some of the messages that are coming in. Thank you so much for
Maybe the
feedback.
Cutoff is 39 then, 38, 39. Curious. Right, one more story coming up after the break about how Foxconn have bought Belkin, Linksys and Waymo. All coming up after these messages. Some music coming up though from Muse. It is Feeling Good here on BFM 89.9, the business station.
Building first world mindsets. BFM 89.9.
Welcome back to Enterprise BizBytes. Final story of the day coming up in just a couple of minutes. We have been asking you a question, though. We started off with a story about whether or not entrepreneurship has an ageism problem. We've been told that the average age of a tech entrepreneur startup in the US is 47. We were asking you whether or not the age of 40 is too old to start your business. And a lot of the kind of suggestions that you're sending in are people under the age of 40, yeah. Which is really interesting.
Yeah, well, the average age of a tech entrepreneur in the Silicon Valley is 47, but just a normal entrepreneur is 39.
Ah, that's the that kind of makes sense. That's a magic number there.
Yeah, but it's not like the 20-year-old college dropout that we have an image of, right? Yeah.
Very interesting. Right, final story. The Taiwanese company known best for manufacturing iPhones, Foxconn, will soon be the company behind some of the best-known routers and other computer accessories. Do you call them routers or routers here?
Routers.
Okay, then routers. I'll do that for today. a subsidiary of Foxconn, Foxconn Interconnect Technology, announced today that they would acquire Belkin, which also owns the brand Linksys and Waymo. You've probably got one of those in your home. Belkin, based in California, has been around for 35 years and is known today for creating an array of computer and phone accessories, wireless chargers, laptop docks, phone cases, all that kind of stuff. They purchased Linksys back in 2013, and they've been running the smart home system called Waymo for more than 5 years now. But it is a major shift for Foxconn, taking it from, you know, being behind the scenes to the owner of three major consumer brands. They're going to pay $866 million in cash to acquire Belkin. This is according to the Financial Times. It will be subject to approval by the U.S. Committee on Foreign Investment, meaning it isn't a done deal just yet. Being as not too long ago, other high-profile foreign acquisitions shut down under the Trump administration. I don't know if you remember that. It was the Broadcom and Qualcomm merger. Broadcom are the Singapore-based company, in fact. That said, Foxconn has pledged to build a $10 billion factory in Wisconsin, which may kind of help sway things just a little bit, you know. So I don't know. I mean, I think it's a great thing. They need this kind of tech over there. They need the jobs over there, specifically in places like Wisconsin, where there's, you know, unemployment is fairly high in that area. $10 billion is going to go a long way, I think.
Yes, but, you know, does it make business sense, right? I mean, to do $10 billion... you know, it doesn't make business sense. But of course, Foxconn, you know, they, of course, Apple have been making their phones and all that. And they were under scrutiny. Scrutiny for treating the employees not too well.
That's right.
Yeah. So the thing is that Foxconn is known for manufacturing iPhones, a PlayStation, Xbox Ones, right? That's what they're known for. And now I think this deal basically is a nudge forward. They're looking into the future. They're trying to get into the smart home device
space. I think so. Yeah.
So I think, you know, we'll just have to wait and see what the name Foxconn, what it will stand for in the future when this comes to fruition.
If it does.
I think what they've done is they've probably learned an awful lot from, like you say, Frida, from Apple and Apple's home devices. Mm. And, of course, we have the Google home devices and the Amazon home devices. This could well be the opening for another home device. I mean, you've got all that tech and all that knowledge from what they've made before, from Linksys and from Belkin. They've got everything that they need. They just need to put it together in one big package. I think that's what we're likely to see.
Exactly.
All right, almost time for us to wrap up. But, of course, let's quickly run through the stories that we've covered today. And just in case you miss any part of the show, you can catch the replay a little bit later on. If you head over to bfm.my and look at the podcast page, it will be there. Or you can download the app from the Apple App Store or, of course, from the Google Play Store. We started off with a story about...
Does entrepreneurship have an ageism problem? Because the average age of tech entrepreneurs in the Silicon Valley is 47, but investors seem a bit skeptical to invest in businesses whose founders are age 32 and above.
We then moved on to how Netflix have been banned from competing at the Cannes Film Festival. This is because Netflix refuses to release its films in theaters, choosing instead to debut them on its streaming service.
Yeah, and then that story about Grab's takeover deal triggering watchdog scrutiny in Singapore and how ComfortDelGro is rethinking its partnership with Uber.
All right, and then, of course, if you're one of those people who stay late at work, there were three things that you could do actually to help you not stay so late at work.
And then finally, of course, we wrapped up with a story about how Foxconn have bought Belkin, Linksys, and Waymo. That's all the time we have for today. My name is Rich Bradbury. I've been joined in the studio today by Frida Liu and, of course, Audrey Raj. We will be back tomorrow, same time, same place at noon for Enterprise Biz Bytes. But don't go anywhere, because coming up after the 1 o'clock news, it is, of course, the Breakfast Grill replay. MCT Bahad made headlines recently when the Philippines property giant Ayala Land bought a majority stake in the company. The Breakfast Grill spoke to the CEO, Jose Juan Hugo, on the company's growth strategy post-takeover and the outlook of the property industry. That's all coming up just after the 1 o'clock news. Meanwhile, some music from The Lightning Seeds with The Life of Riley, followed by a little bit of Richard Ashcroft with This Is How It Feels. All here on BFM 89.9. The Business Station.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.